Hey, Alejandro. Jeffrey speaking.
Hey, Jeffrey. How are you?
Hey, man. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear you, too. Where are you?
I'm in my son's apartment in Crown Heights in Brooklyn.
Are you there?
I'm here. I'm here. I'm in my son's house in Crown Heights in Brooklyn. I'm just visiting New York for about a week, roughly.
Very nice.
I was insisting to him, you know, the screeners have come for The Revenant, and I said, you really have to see this in a big, beautiful theater, particularly for just the size and the scope and the immersion, the immersive aspects of it, and for the Sakamoto music. You can't, I mean, it really is preferable to seeing this in a big theater. And so I think he's going to follow my advice.
I think hopefully people will see it in IMAX. I think we have this premiere and the IMAX, and honestly, it's absolutely another experience. Absolutely.
You know, yeah. I haven't seen it in IMAX yet. I've seen it at the, at the ArcLight, and I saw it at the Academy, and I would love to see it in IMAX. Wow, that would be amazing.
Yeah, it's another experience. Another experience. And yeah. Yeah.
I have to say, I said this the other day in a piece about, because your film is vaguely similar to Quentin Tarantino's film, that they're both 19th century and they're both in sort of covered with snow, and they're both very striking from a cinematic, photographic point of view. But I had to say that I was just floored by Chivo's cinematography, and I was not knocked out by Robert Richardson's 70 ultra Panavision 70 cinematography. It was very good, it was very satisfying, but Chivo's, your stuff was just totally, I've never seen anything like it, I just don't know that film can stand up to the best of digital. What's your feeling about film versus digital these days?
Well, you know, I think Bob Richardson and Chivo are basically one of the masters of light. You know, and both are one of the best. I think the difference, I haven't seen Hateful Eight, but what I think we try to attempt here, first of all, we test with 35 and 65 millimeters when we were in pre-production.
Yeah.
The problem that we found, because I wanted to shoot the film in film, but there was two very, you know, undeniable reasons that gave me no choice.
Yeah.
One was that because the long take that I was doing to shoot this in film in a 65 millimeter, it would have to be this, you know, 1,000 magazine cartridge that are super heavy and super big.
Yeah.
That will not allow me to have the flexibility and the movement to get those long takes. And even with 1,000 feet, it will not be enough. So that was one limitation that film was given. Second was that we had a lot of problems in the laboratory. We were having problems with quality. Then in the airport, the x-rays screwed us many times. And there was so it was very scary, all the process that we would have to go through. And the quality was not as we expect.
Right.
But maybe the main reason was that we were shooting in December, it was in winter, and at 3 o'clock was dark. And
yeah.
At 2:30, under the trees, there was no exposition in film. So there was no aperture. So the digital camera gave me 1 hour more of light available. And that was huge because we knew that we would be shooting in the magic hour.
Yeah.
So in a way, at Birdman, which basically shooting in corridors with only practical lights, that would be impossible to shoot it in film because of the exposition.
Right.
It's the second time that I would say the technological, you know, the technological advantage of these cameras has given me enough reason to try them. And I have to say, we were the first ones to use the 65 Alexa. It was in that moment that we started shooting it. It was not even tested. There was no insurance for it. It was a very risky bet that Chivo and I did. Mm. The studio supported because it was not even guaranteed that it would be good. And we shot almost 50% of the film in 65. And by the results of it, I'm absolutely, incredibly more than satisfied with the results. I think we could have never done this good film, unfortunately.
So almost 50% of it. Okay. So almost 50% of it with the Alexa 65, and the remainder was 35?
Yeah, the Alexa, the M, the Alexa M, and that was basically the other half.
Right.
But Jeffrey, the secret is not the format. I think the format is not really the main thing, in my point of view. I think that everything is about the light. No matter if you shoot in a bigger format, but what you are shooting is not right or the light is not transcendental, it will just look bigger and with more detail.
Yeah.
I think the secret of everything is the light. I would say the magic hour, the advantage we have is that this is the moment that God speaks, right? After the sun goes down, then it's when every tree breathes, everything reveals itself as they are the things. So there's an ecstasy in that moment in the planet Earth that we capture. And that's why I think people feel that ecstasy feeling when you are seeing a Caravaggio painting, is because the light that these guys use was exactly the light where, God talks. And that's what makes the difference beyond the format that helps.
Yeah.
But the sauce, the real soul is not the format, is the light.
Okay.
And honestly, artificial light, I have used getting to hating artificial film light because it's absolutely unidimensional. It's artificial, it's not complex at all. It just doesn't have the complexity of the colors and the immense amount of complexity of the sunlight. It's impossible. So it seems very limited. The artificial film light is going to disappear, thank God, because it's
cold. I was thinking about the theme of the metaphor, if you will, about the Revenant, which is...
Sorry, I think I'm losing you. Suddenly, it's blank. Are you listening to me?
I can hear you, but I'm on a cell phone, and I think...
Okay.
And you are also on a cell phone. Are you walking, by the way?
Yeah, I'm here outside a garden, but then suddenly you start talking, and suddenly I go blank.
Okay.
Let me hear you, let's see if we are...
Okay, you sound fine on this end. I was asking if there is a theme to attach to your film. I think it would be something about relentless persistence in the face of horrible adversity, and that we all face our own tasks in that sense, and that we're all faced with, we have to keep pushing as long as our heart is beating, as long as we can still draw a breath. We must keep on in our particular fights, in our paths, in our quests. And there is certainly something that I think we could all relate to that. Anybody who's done any living can relate to that. But I think what is stronger is that this is a film that has taken me, is taking audiences in a place where I don't think anybody's ever been, not in this way, in a much more realistic and immersive and enveloping way. So you feel like you've in a tactile, organic way, you felt a kind of experience that has never been captured before. So that was
the whole idea was that this is basically a show, a don't-tell kind of film. It's not about work. It's about emotion. It's about the origins of cinema, where crews went to the real places. And tell the story with narratively in a rogue movie that is about, storytelling with pure cinema. And for that to be, immersive, we work very hard to find the best cinematic way for people to feel the cold, and to smell the fear and to really wind blows, like the sounds through the trees, and I want the people really to become the hero and be beaten and be frozen, be broken, and die, and then born and feel warm, feel all the compassion and rage. And so in a way, the difficult experience of this film, it was planned, and I think it happened. And again, what I'm saying to you, with the complexity of the light and the landscapes and the aesthetic things, totally remind us that we are just, again, creatures, organisms. That yes, we have more technological tools, but we are still surviving every day. So anyway, but it reminds us a little bit of that garden that we in a way lost in a way, and that was the thing. But my only sad thing about that is that sometimes that physicality of the film and the physicality of the film can in a way distract or not allow people or just make people just stay in the foreground and distract them to see the background, because I think after that, yes, that's really powerful and beautiful and it was designed, but I think behind there's a background that is about the themes of the film, complexity of the social and historical context, which I think because the impact that film had visually, people in a way sometimes does not feel, you know, they need time to see that, okay, it was bad, but then what's in the radius of all that? So I think that has been lost in the conversation a little bit.
You know, if I were Leo during the shooting of this, I would have been saying to you, listen, Alejandro, I don't care. I mean, I'm going to do everything that you're going to tell me to do, but I want to wear a wetsuit when I go into the river. I mean, nobody's going to see it. I just want to wear a wet. But I have a feeling that you said no wetsuit, and he said no wetsuit. Is that right? Is that more or less correct?
No, it's sometimes in the September shooting, no, but then later, yes.
Because it looked so brutal, man. God. But I mean, I don't want to describe it, but it is so brutal. You have to chuckle.
No, it was brutal. But I think that it was our duty. You know, it was our duty. I'm very surprised that people get so impressed that we went to natural locations, natural light. And I said, well, if you are impressed because I ate a real apple instead of a GMO apple. So, but because we are so used to go to the supermarket and see these fake red big apples and tasteless. Then when somebody brings a real apple, you taste it and say, wow, are you really eating a real apple? I said, yeah, what's wrong with that? What's the fuck with that? I mean, you know what I mean? We have it's only very shocking that the conversations have just been today about how we eat it and how great. And I said, well, that's what we're eating. That's the real thing. So, I mean, anyway, the fact that it's surprising, it's very surprising to me. And because I realized how intoxicating the film process has been without noticing, now we are submerging. That's not the way it should be. It should be a green screen and all that. And if that will be the natural, but actually will be first, really, did you attempt to do every shit in a green screen? That should be the question. That should be more shocking.
Speaking of everything being real, I don't believe, or it doesn't seem likely, that the scene with Leo and the horse, and I'm not going to describe it in particular, I'm just going to speak it in general terms to not spoil those who have not seen the film, but there's a scene with Leo and a horse. I presume that the scene I'm talking about, this is after the cliff, was a manufactured or a prosthetic horse along with the everything else we see. Is that correct?
Yeah, believe me, in Mexico we eat for breakfast a horse taco. This was not the case. The crew didn't have that kind of luck. I have to say that, honestly, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned that. That's one of my favorites, because for me that scene is a reborn thing. The other day, a woman told me that is very good. I said, what do you mean? I said, you know, there is a creature that has come from my vagina, blood, and that was the most beautiful moment of my husband when it did. And I couldn't. And I said, that reminded me when I give birth to my son. And I said, wow, that's a very interesting thing. And said, it's such a maternal role of Lucio taking care of his cub. It's spiritually in that sweat lodge.
Right.
It's kind of a spiritual healing. Mm. And then nature killed him physically, and he reborn again from that course, which right. when that woman told me that, I said, well, that's a very beautiful thought about somebody coming out from.
Let me just ask you one quick question about the actual story or the book, which I have not read. But why do you think trappers went out in the cold like this? If I was a trapper, I would say, let's start in the spring and finish in the late fall. Why expose ourselves to horrific elements? Why did they do that, do you think? Why did the actual trappers, Hugh Glass and his and the guys he went out with, why did they expose themselves to trapping and collecting pelts in the cold? Why not do it in the spring, summer, and early fall? Doesn't that make sense? Why would they expose themselves?
Sorry, Jeffrey, I lost you again in the middle of it.
I'm wondering why Hugh Glass and the others went out in search of pelts in the cold, in the winter. Why were they doing it in the winter as opposed to, I would think it would be so inhospitable that it would be better to go out in the early to late spring and, of course, the summer and the early to mid-fall, but not in the winter. And I was wondering why they even went out in that time period.
That the winter was the biggest hunting season for them.
That I didn't know.
I was very impressed about it. But they basically, the biggest hunting season for them was that. And they spent normally, you know, half of it in the fort, eating all what they hunt. But it was in that time that really was very, very animal driven. Also, that's why.
Okay. I wanted to ask, just making sure of this, but the Argent...
Hi, Steve. Sorry, I'm so sorry. We're actually running out of time, so it's going to have to be the last question.
Alejandro, I saw A Man in the Wilderness at Quentin Tarantino's theater, which was based more or less on the same story, and the big revenge moment, which comes at the end between... Have you seen this film, by the way?
I saw that film, like, 5 years ago, when I was starting rewriting the script.
Right.
And I thought it was really bad.
It's a low-budget film shot. One very quick question about the Sakamoto disqualification. You know, I'm absolutely head over heels in love with Ryuki Sakamoto's music, and I was so heartbroken when I heard about the Academy's disqualification. And you know that, for instance, with The Social Network, Trent Reznor and a colleague shared the credit score, and the Academy's rule is that only one composer can compose a Oscar-nominated score, but there have been exceptions to this rule. Are you thinking of challenging this, or are you just going to let it go?
Absolutely. We are appealing. It's the second time that they do it. Last time they denied Antonio Sanchez that opportunity, sending a really wrong message for musicians and directors to approach music in a very different way, more, you know, experimental and approach it differently.
Yeah.
And this time, what they are arguing doesn't make sense to me. They are arguing that the tapestry is a little complex and they cannot read the difference.
Yeah.
And obviously, everything is tied by. And after the traumatized experience we went last year, I was very sure that the amount of musical Ryuji and everything was absolutely clear, even though that it was the concept plan that it will be, you know, the way Alba and Ryuji have worked for six albums is not an orthodox academic way.
Yeah.
It's not like they work in tapestries that are really complex. And when they blended all these, you know, deliberately that I had, let's blend all these sounds of nature to a Tarkovsky set, that there's a moment that the music should be blended with the sounds. And for them not to understand that this is not the classic, you know, obvious piece, I just would like to invite them to reconsider and go and be helped to be clarified with the musician Ryuichi, sending a letter explaining helping them, and I would like to get them every access to everything for them to understand that these doctors see what's conceptual,
yeah,
what's a concept, not what are an accident. And because I think beyond, you know, the sadness of Ryuchi not having this opportunity to reconsider and the film is damaged, I think that most importantly is the message that he sent to new musicians and filmmakers. Be scared to try something different in music because those rules are not understandable. They are not clear. And they are so rigid that they are not allowing musicians to get a different approach without fear of being disqualified. Now that the approach of music has changed, it's a much more complex kind of thing. So anyway, I hope they reconsider because it's sad for all of us.
It's very sad, and I hope you guys. So you're going to appeal fairly soon, are you? Is that the intention?
Yeah.
Okay.
Today.
All right.
And I hope that we will bring every tool for them to reconsider and clarify with respect. I respect everybody, but in a way, I think they have to respect that there's more. If they have a question, we can clarify that.
Right. I wanted to just tell you one last thing. There's a scene in your film in which Leo and I believe Forrest Goodluck. They stick their tongues out to catch snowflakes on their tongue. It's a very beautiful little scene. The same.
Sorry, I want to make sure we actually are out of time. So this is going to have to be the last.
This is really it. I just want to tell you, Alejandro, the very same thing happens in Quentin Tarantino's film. Jennifer Jason Leigh is looking up at the sky, sticks her tongue out, and catches snowflakes on her tongue. Same thing. Interesting.
That's really, really fun.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a scene. You're talking about Ponying and that rescued him, the buffalo, and that was always written.
Yeah.
There it was a different theme where it was happening in the horse, but then we find this beautiful, real, snow falling moment in that creek in the
place. Yeah.
And I said, let's do it here. Let's improvise.
Okay.
And then we did it, and it was wonderful.
Yeah. It's a lovely scene.
The temptations of having your tongue with snow is not a very difficult one to have.
Okay. Very nice talking to you, Alejandro, and I hope to see you again soon, and Merry Christmas.
The same, Jeffrey. And do me a favor. I don't know, whatever I said to you, the thing of the... I haven't seen Hateful Eight, but I would like not to be portrayed as I am against film or I am against Bob Richardson because I love Bob, his friend.
I'll be careful about that.
You know what I mean? I don't want that this is like a confrontation because I'm dying to see Hateful Eight in a way I'm sure that it will be beautiful. But for me, this is my theory that is the life more important than the format. And I what I'm saying is I think Bob and Chivo are the best, so I don't want this to be totally misunderstood as a confrontation, but more as a, okay, this is one thing and the other one is another thing. But
got it.
Both are great. You know what I mean? All right.
I understand.
So I appreciate that. Have a good day. Holidays and all the best for next year.
You too, man. Take care.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Bye-bye.